Hi, I'm Jody the mom.
And I'm Dr. Bard the doc, and this is Mom and Doc Talks, where we talk all things healing pans and pandas with a special emphasis on homeopathy. But we're not talking about homeopathy today. We are talking about the conventional treatment approach. We are going to both share the current recommendations for treatment, as well as Jody's going to share her personal experience with what she went through with Avery. So let's start with the personal side, just because that's always a little bit more helpful for context. So you can share what was done and what was recommended. I'll probably chime in as we're going through and talk about, like, as Jody touches on certain points, I'll chime in with where that falls in line with the treatment recommendations. So you finally got a diagnosis. You actually were already on the conventional cycle, like the conventional merry-go-round, even before you got a diagnosis. So for you, it really started with those antibiotics, right?
Yeah, I feel like that was, for a while, that was it. It was like antibiotics. And, you know, in the midst of trying to get a diagnosis, we kept finding other little things that we were having to address, like, you know, the tubes and adenoids and I even forgot to mention, like, going to a GI doctor and, oh, she's got reflux, we need to put her on this medicine. So, like, some, like, one-off type stuff was coming up. So we were doing some other things as well, but it was just that cycle of antibiotic, next antibiotic, that one's not working, let's move to another one. And that just happening over and over and over again, or IVIG. Like, if antibiotics don't work, it's IVIG until we got to the specialist. And then the specialist had some other options that are a little bit more in the functional.
Yeah, you jumped quickly to somebody who actually, like, went to the integrative approach. So
yeah.
Maybe I'll actually start then, because you kind of skipped a lot of the stuff that is generally recommended.
At the time Avery was going through it, a lot of these things weren't, like, some of the mainstream medical things that kiddos are getting now weren't even recommended back then.
So there was something published, I think it was in 2015 or 2016, might have been 2014, but there was a special publication in one of the pediatric medical journals that was all about PANDAS treatment. And so those are, I think that they're actually mostly open source now, or they're definitely accessible for any providers who are looking for them through some of the, like, molecular labs that at one point was giving them away for free and sending them out to people. There's lots of places that have resources, PANDAS Physicians Network, et cetera. So the general recommendations are a threefold approach for medications, and that's in antibiotics, anti-inflammatories, and psychiatric medications, specifically antidepressants. And so the antibiotics that are generally recommended to start with when it's strep, and again, this is a caveat, well, a couple of caveats, I should say, before I go through all of these specifics that are generally recommended. First and foremost, the good news about this is with conventional medications, you're going to have to work with a provider to get a prescription anyway. So you should always work with somebody before trying these things on their own, because every single thing that we're going to talk about has some side effects or some potential negative consequences from taking them. So you should really work with somebody who is a trained provider, so that they can actually follow your case and make sure you're not doing anything that could be problematic. And then second of all, the other caveat is that I completely forgot, and I will remind myself when I get to it. That's the caveat, is that this is about PANDAS, is generally what these are following. Because again, as I shared in episode 2, PANS is a syndrome and PANDAS is a disorder. And so that basically has a lot more studies behind it and has a lot more evidence behind it. So most of what I'm talking about is related to PANDAS, not specifically PANS, although there is a lot of overlap in both symptom presentation and in treatment. But when we're talking about PANDAS, and this is where it comes in most specifically, is with the antibiotics that are recommended. So the recommended antibiotics to start with are generally Augmentin, which is contraindicated for somebody who has a penicillin allergy, because it's amoxicillin plus clavulinic acid. And so that does tend to be the first place to start at a higher dose than normal for kiddos with PANDAS, because there seems to be less likelihood of resistance for strep forming to the to Augmentin than to other antibiotics. When Augmentin is not able to be taken because of an allergy, then we're looking at erythromycin is generally what's recommended next. And that is less effective against strep than Augmentin, which is why it's not where you start. That said, when you have co-infections or other infections like mycoplasma is a really common one, we'll often start more with erythromycin than with the Augmentin. So the antibiotics is the first step. The second step is an anti-inflammatory. And so with here, we're looking at just ibuprofen over the counter or sometimes a steroid burst. Jody, I don't remember if Avery was ever given a steroid burst. I don't.
She was a couple of times. Yeah.
Okay. So the steroid burst is frequently recommended to just try and calm things down. It can be really helpful in the short term. Oftentimes, much like the antibiotics that are just killing an infection, they're not addressing that underlying susceptibility to having this atypical response to an infection. So a lot of times we'll see the symptoms will come back, oftentimes even worse after you've done something to just suppress the symptoms, whether it's ibuprofen or the steroid burst. Sometimes doctors will also throw in antihistamines in there as well, because allergens can actually cause a trigger for these kiddos. Jody, you just made a face that makes me think that you want to chime in with something to say here about antihistamine.
Because I, like, as we're starting, I'm like, oh, we didn't really do anything in the like mainstream medical world other than antibiotics and eventually IVIG. Everything you've said, we did. Yeah. Like, I just didn't remember it.
You just forget. Yeah. You just forget. And so then the other thing is the psychiatric medications. And so that's where we're looking primarily at SSRIs are what's generally most recommended. And that's because that's what's generally recommended for OCD. That said, kids with PANS tend to be very sensitive to psychiatric medications, which is one of the reasons that there's a possibility, a very strong possibility that I had PANS as a child, with my reactions to the psychiatric medications were not good. And so we will all want to start with higher doses than typical and longer periods with the antibiotics and anti-inflammatories and shorter, smaller doses of the psychiatric medication. So we're talking about like a quarter of the typical dose for their age and weight. There are some recommendations to use other medications, especially if rage and violence is part of it. There will be, there are recommendations in the guidelines to use antipsychotics, atypical antipsychotics, in particular risperdal or risperidone is recommended regularly. For anybody who has a kid on the spectrum, that might be something that you recognize because that's used so frequently to control aggressive behaviors in young children with autism. It is an atypical antipsychotic though. There has been more and more push in the conventional community lately to start using more benzodiazepines in children for controlling their anxiety. All of these psychiatric medications come with a lot of risks associated with them. Kids with PANDAS are just as likely to have the adverse effect of having increases in suicidal ideation from psychotropic medications. And benzodiazepines, they're very effective for a very short time, and then they wear off and you have dependence on them. And so you end up having tons of anxiety even while you're taking the benzodiazepine, but the benzodiazepine isn't working as much anymore and you can't stop taking it because your anxiety is just horrible without it. And you have a lot of physical withdrawal symptoms too. So that's the first place that we start before we go into like higher level of intervention. So Jody, anything you want to chime in with there on that first level of interventions that are generally recommended?
We like, now I remember going through the different things, and even like the steroids was one of the things that really stood out. We did steroids multiple times. The first time it was actually really good. I was like, sweet, this is good. I like this. Let's do this more. And we did it a couple of times more. And the last time, I'm going to go off into a little bit of story time just because this was like, I remember one of my hardest days as a mom going through PANS. Avery was, so when she would get off the steroids, like the last three times that we did steroids, coming off of them, she would just go so much deeper into her PANS symptoms. And I remember her starting a soccer season being okay, fine, being able to play soccer. And then just really going into a whole bunch of symptoms. And then we got to a point where we're like, okay, we're going to do, you know, another round of steroids, did it. And coming out of that round of steroids, like, I remember like the exact moment standing on the sidelines and like watching her just like roam around the soccer field, not knowing even that she was supposed to kick the ball. Like her being so confused and in just like a deeper level. And so for poor little Avery, like, it's like everything we tried just made her worse and just like made the symptoms stronger. And like all of those steps that were supposed to help her were not helping and were making it worse.
And we'll probably talk about this depending on how geeky we want to get about homeopathy in a future episode, where the reality is that in homeopathic theory and in practice, we see that the more we use things to actively suppress versus palliate, where we just give symptom relief for a while, but like where we're really trying to fully suppress the function of what's going on in the body. And steroids is one of the main culprits of that. That it does tend to do exactly what Jody just said. It tends to drive things deeper, and we can actually see further expression of illness come out. You know, we see it in simple terms when we're using steroids for things like eczema, that it tends to drive it deeper, and we get more allergies and asthma that come on as a result of not just addressing the eczema on that first level. Like, it doesn't have to go to allergies and asthma just because you have the atopic dermatitis. That triad does not have to exist together. That triad comes about as a result of the suppressive medications that drive things deeper.
Yeah.
All right. So moving on, because I know you're going to want to spend a little bit of time talking about IVIG. The next steps that are often recommended, and this will vary from provider to provider. Everybody has sort of like their go-to tools that they have seen work really well for their patient population, and they tend to lean on them more. So tonsillectomy and adenoidectomy is recommended. I'm not seeing that quite as often. There's only a couple of providers that I can guess that somebody has seen them because they've had those done. It's not seeming to come up as often as it did maybe 5-6 years ago. But the thought behind that is that the bacteria actually gets trapped in those crypts in the tonsils. And so if you remove the place for them to get trapped, that you're not going to have the response. But again, that's missing the point that we're having an atypical response, and like whether they're getting trapped in the tonsils or you're getting exposed to it on the playground, your body still has that atypical response if you're just trying to get rid of the bug or get rid of or kill it or get rid of a place for it to hide. So that's why we see personally, I actually had my biggest flare that I have ever had of my symptoms following my tonsillectomy that then led to a pneumonia infection and then led to all sorts of flares of like cognitive regression, and went from being like a top reader in school and top kid to like my parents being talked to about my reading comprehension issues and all sorts of regressions that I was having. So after tonsillectomy and adenoidectomy, or even maybe simultaneously, IVIG is often recommended. That stands for intravenous immunoglobulin. Basically, what we're doing with this is we're taking pooled blood products that are getting the immunoglobulins from thousands of people and giving them to kids to try to essentially reset the immune system so that it can have a more appropriate immune response. For some people, this is a miraculous thing. For most people, that miracle wears off over time. It's a treatment that has to be given about once a month, and it needs to be given on repeat. And people tend to see diminishing returns, much like with the antibiotics, that each subsequent time it's not working quite as well. I personally have some concerns about it because we don't know what we don't know when it comes to testing for infections, and with how sensitive PANS kids are, we do run the risk that there is an infection in the blood pool that we don't know that we need to test for, that these kiddos can be sensitive to. And I'm curious if that might have happened with your experience with Avery. So I'm going to let you talk a little bit about your IVIG experience when you finally did go there.
I think one of my hardest stops with IVIG was because of my younger daughter, and knowing that she, you know, knowing all about her mast cell condition, but also knowing that you can't, like the blood products in these IVIG infusions, or you can't test them for mast cell disease. And so that scared the heck out of me. And then like all the other things, But we got Avery to, you know, the point where we had done pretty much all of the things the mainstream medical world had for her, and she continued to get worse and worse. And again, like just out of desperation, you know, I decided that we were at the point where we needed to do IVIG. And even the and I know we're skipping all around, but the panda specialist at the time agreed that it was time, because we had tried all of his stuff, which we'll talk about in the next episode. Going into it, like even the day of going there, I was like, what am I doing? What am I doing? Just, I had so much anxiety about it. We got her hooked up and started the infusion, and some of the symptoms that she had like started going off the wall, like crazy, weird, like twitches and movements and like piano fingers, like I had never seen it. All kinds of neck movements. And I was like, okay, I've seen all of these things, but nothing like I'm seeing right now. I would call the nurses in, and Avery knew that it was happening. And the nurses would come in and Avery would start dancing. She, like in her hospital bed, she would start dancing around. And I'm like, what are you doing? And I'm like, you're fine. Just be still. You're fine. And she would like constantly move to like make it not seen that she was having these things going on. We did that multiple times. And I was like, something's wrong. Something is not right. I just like that mom intuition in me was like terrified. At the time I hadn't found my, my voice to say stop.
Right.
And this is, you know, I know that we'll get there, you know, going through this whole journey, but I didn't have the strength to say, stop, this is bad. I didn't have the knowing, I didn't know what was going on. Anyways, she got through her treatment. We went home next day. She was super, super sick. She spent like 3 days where she was sick. We had to take her back into the ER and get fluids because she was throwing up so much. And eventually we got back home and we sat and we waited and we were like, it's coming. Like, she's going to get better. Like, we know we have a little bit of a wait, but eventually she's going to start getting better. Avery, because it's Avery, started getting worse. And it's almost like after IVIG, she just completely tanked and went downhill, and her, you know, her symptoms that were really hard became so much harder. Like, her rages were violent. They were throwing things. They were loud. They were longer. They were, you know, her intrusive thoughts were way more. Her talking about not wanting to live started, you know, shortly after that. So for us, IVIG was like the catalyst to just like the plunge into like nowhere, really nowhere. And after IVIG, we had seen the one provider a couple of times, that eventually was like, your child has ASD. And that came from her symptoms getting so much worse after that, that she did look like, you know, she had autism. It was not good for us.
Right. And like I said at the beginning, when I was talking about IVIG, some people it is really great for. And so the truth of the matter is, we see a lot of people who it wasn't great for, because if it was great for them, they wouldn't need to come see us. So it can be beneficial for people. Many, many, many people, it's not a long-term solution for,
right.
Which is why we have to advance to other things like plasmapheresis, where we're basically doing plasma exchange, trying to clean out the blood and send it back in clean. That's not an easy thing to get. It's usually meant more for autoimmune encephalitis, which is similar to pandas, but not the same exact thing. There's also use of a lot of biologic medications nowadays that are meant for people with like really, really intense autoimmune diseases, things like rheumatoid arthritis and that. So a lot of biologics are being used, as well as even some cancer meds that are trying to essentially kill a part of the immune system. Like, so Rituxan is one that is used regularly, and that basically just obliterates the immune response for a period of time, for about 6 months. So you do get symptom relief, but it's got a lot of side effects too, and it doesn't last. It needs to be repeated every 6 months.
Yeah.
And a lot of these things are not covered by insurance too. With like the did you end up getting it covered by insurance with the, having had the Cunningham panel?
We did. I had to fight for it. Luckily I knew how to work all of that stuff by then, just because my experience with my younger daughter, and we had like been through the insurance like denial craziness already. But like luckily we got that covered. But everything else, we spent so much money. So, yeah. I mean, we went through, we went through an entire savings account doing all of this stuff. And we even had good insurance at the time. It was still just crazy expensive.
Yeah. So I'm going to wrap this episode by saying that this is one of the reasons it's so valuable to have community, and why we talked about community before we talked about treatment is things like this, where, you know, Jody has had experience of getting IVIG covered. There's lots of people who have experience of getting IVIG covered to make it more accessible to get some of these treatments that are quite expensive if they're not covered by insurance, that might be beneficial for some folks. None of these ultimately address that underlying susceptibility. So what we generally see is we see that there's improvement of symptoms that are, they're palliated or they're suppressed for a while. But if you stop the medications, they come back. And oftentimes, even if you don't stop the medications, they still start to creep back in because the body adapts and adjusts to having that medication present. And it still has that susceptibility that it's trying to express because it's crying for help. And so many of these medications, we still see people fail on and have symptoms come back, and or see progression into other areas of autoimmunity, like we talked about before with like rheumatoid arthritis, diabetes, various different things that can come on afterwards. So a lot of people end up going through that series that we just talked about and reaching a point where they're at the end point and going to functional, integrative, et cetera, other approaches. So that's what we're going to talk about in our next episode. And so we hope that we'll see you there.
Bye.